ేంద్రియవానపి ఓజస్సహోబలయుతం బిభ్రద్దేహం అకర్మకం శయానో వీతనిద్రశ్చ నేహేతేంద్రియవానపి. Matajis. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: A saintly person should remain peaceful and materially inactive, maintaining his body without much endeavor. Even though possessed of all full sensual, mental and physical strength, a saintly person should not become active for material gain, but rather should always remain alert to his actual self-interest. Purport: The word Vita Nidra in this verse is very significant. Nidra means sleep or ignorance, and Vit means freed from. In other words, a transcendentalist should always be awake to his eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and should carefully cultivate Krishna consciousness. Being confident of his relationship with the Lord, he should not endeavor for his personal maintenance, knowing that the Lord is protecting him in all respects. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states that the example of the python is given so that one will not uselessly waste his time in bodily maintenance. One should not think, however, that the purpose of life is to lie on the ground like a python or to make a show of starving the body. The example of the python should not encourage one to become completely inactive. One should rather become active in spiritual advancement and inactive in material sense gratification. If one becomes completely inactive, that is certainly nidra or the darkness of ignorance, in which one remains asleep to his identity as an eternal servant of the Personality of Godhead. A transcendentalist is eager to execute his service to the Lord, and therefore he is grateful when the Lord provides material facilities for such service. Mere renunciation of the material world is Phalgu Vairagya, or an immature stage of spiritual understanding. One must come to the stage of Yukta Vairagya, engaging everything in the service of Lord Krishna. It is our practical experience that a devotee absorbed in spreading Krishna consciousness automatically receives all facilities for his personal maintenance. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vande Aham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta राधाकांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्री गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। मुखं करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघयते गिरिं यत्कृपा तमहं वंदे श्रीगुरुं दीनतारिणं श्रीचैतन्यमीश्वरं परमानंदमाधवं। हरे कृष्ण। ओजसः बलयुतं बिभ्रद्देहं अकर्मकं शयानो वीतनिद्रश्च नेहेतेन्द्रियवानपि। A saintly person should remain peaceful and materially inactive, maintaining his body without much endeavor. Even though possessed of all full sensual mental and physical strength, a saintly person should not become active for material gain, but rather should always remain alert to his actual self-interest. Hare Krishna. Seek the blessings of all the devotees. Can speak something worthwhile for my purification. One time, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj visited a temple construction site in one of the major cities in Maharashtra. And while he was visiting the construction site, the devotee who was along with him was updating how the progress is happening for the construction. And the devotee told that this temple will be built in three phases. The first phase, where the temple construction will take place, we will come up with a beautiful temple of Tirupati Balaji. And it's going to be on the hill, so very much it will appear as if someone who is visiting has visited Tirupati. The main reason being, in the first phase, if Tirupati Balaji temple comes up, then naturally the Lakshmi will also flow. So the donations will come and it will help to construct furthermore temple requirements. So the first phase will be construction of Tirupati Balaji temple. The second phase would be construction of monastery and especially prasadam hall, where a free food would be distributed to each and everyone who comes. And in the third phase and the final phase, the main temple of Radha Krishna would come up. So Maharaj asked, what is the reason why you are coming up with Radha Krishna temple only at the end? So then they said that if we come up with Radha Krishna temple in the second phase, then no money will flow in for the third phase, if we come up with monastery and the prasadam hall in the third phase. So finally we decided that the Radha Krishna temple will come in the final and the concluding third stage. So Maharaj immediately promptly asked the question, do you think the purpose of appearance of Balaji in this world is for raising funds? Is Balaji appearing in this world as a fundraiser? The purpose of Balaji's appearance in this world is to remove all the sins of all the pilgrims who visit him for darshan. And then Maharaj said that Radha and Krishna are supplying everything to everyone in this universe. How could you keep them waiting from coming here, thinking that their coming will stop the supply of funds required for the rest of the construction? So this devotee was very much taken aback, and he was sharing his realization. He shared that we also are practicing spirituality since quite some time. But we think that we have to be practical and realistic in this material world. But for great souls, spirituality itself is a practical reality. There is nothing that exists for them apart from spirituality, which is actually practical and real solution. And we also, coming to this verse, was thinking that even after practicing spirituality for so many years, we still doubt. We still doubt the words of scripture. We still doubt the words of Lord Krishna, where he says, "Ananyas chintayanto mam, ye jana paryupasate, tesham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham." That I carry what someone has and provide what someone lacks. And many times we think that scriptures are too idealistic and we have to live in a realistic world. So whether this verse really applies to us, this verse says that one should be inactive and maintain one's body without much endeavor. Now how is that possible? Of course, these instructions are particularly applied to a particular varna and ashram. But anyone who has to survive in this world has to endeavor. In fact, the world looks up to those who are really hardworking. Those who are enterprising, those who are industrious, or as they say, those who are workaholic. People really look up to them, people really adore them in this world. And for those who are good for nothing, people look down. People don't really appreciate their existence, or people just claim themselves to be parasites, lazy, or whatever. And here we see this Avadhut Brahmana has adopted this Ajgar Vritti, and that's what kindled the curiosity in the heart of Yadu Maharaj, the King Yadu. The first paradox is that he's active, he's young, he's handsome, and he has the capacity, the ability, the facility, and the opportunity to earn. But still, he is showing disinterest. And the second paradox is, although he's inactive, how he is able to maintain himself? If he will not maintain, he will starve. But it appeared that he was well fed. He was quite stout. He was not weak. He was not lean. But here, he said, the Avadhut Brahmana said that he's adopted this Ajigar Vritti. He's learned from this python that one should not endeavor much, especially for one's own material maintenance. So this is a very high level of renunciation. Initially, renunciates would go out for begging to a limited, to a finite homes, where they would get some, whatever alms they would get, and they would be satisfied with whatever they got. And they would sustain their lives. Now this act of begging itself is an act of, it's very humiliating. In fact, it's not humiliating, but it's very pure, it's an act of purifying. Now when one has ego, and when that ego is attacked, that is humiliating. But when one voluntarily takes up that service of keeping aside one's ego and going out and rejecting the honor, that's humility. So the sannyasis, renunciates, they would go out and do begging as an act of humility, humbling themselves voluntarily. That's why it is said humility is false ego rejected, and humiliation is false ego frustrated. Now, higher than this, the one step ahead, is someone on a Paramahamsa stage who doesn't even want to go and ask for food, who doesn't even want to go to beg to from anyone. They just sit at one place and it appears that they are idly sitting and they are doing nothing. But the fact is, they are so busy internally contemplating on the higher truths, especially on Krishna. That's the reason they adopt this Ajgar Vritti. So Ajgar Vritti is adopted not out of extreme laziness, but it's adopted out of extreme absorption within. And a person who has adopted this Ajgar Vritti thinks that there is so much to meditate, so much to learn, so much to relish, that it's a waste of time to go out and search for food. That's the whole purpose. Great souls, exalted devotees on a Paramahamsa level, they adopt this Ajgar Vritti. And we also see in the life of Madhvendra Puri, at one stage of life, he adopted this Ayachita Vritti, or also called as Ajgar Vritti. Ayachita Vritti Puri Virakta Udas, Ayachita Paile Khana Nahe Upavas. So, Madhvendra Puri would avoid begging. And he was completely unattached and indifferent to material things. And if someone would offer him some food, Ayachita Paile Khana, only if someone would come and offer him the food, then only he would accept. Otherwise, Nahi Upavas, otherwise he would fast. And Prabhupada, in the purport to this verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada writes that a sannyasi can beg from door to door just to collect food, but a Paramahamsa who has taken Ayachita Vritti or Ajgar Vritti does not ask anyone for food also. If someone offers him food voluntarily, he eats. Ayachita Vritti means being accustomed to refrain from begging, and Ajgar Vritti indicates one who is compared to a python, a big snake that makes no effort to acquire food, but rather allows food to come automatically within its mouth. In other words, a Paramahamsa simply engages exclusively in the service of the Lord without caring even for eating or sleeping. It was stated about the six Goswamis, Nidrahara, Vira, Vihara, Kaj, Vijito. In a Paramahamsa stage, one conquers the desire for sleep, food and sense gratification. One remains a humble, meek mendicant, engaged in the service of the Lord day and night. Madhvendra Puri had attained this Paramahamsa stage. We also see in the life of Gaur Kishodas Babaji Maharaj, whether he was on the bank of Yamuna in Vrindavan, whether he was on the bank of Ganges in Mayapur, he just was so immersed and absorbed in bhajan that he did not care for eating. In fact, it is mentioned that many a time, just in order to, shut the hunger, he would just pick up the mud from the Ganges and just eat that mud, so that not much time is wasted in bodily maintenance. Of course, this is a very high level of renunciation. One cannot imitate it. One cannot artificially imitate it. Even we see in the life of Srivas Thakur, Mahaprabhu asked him that you are full time engaged, busy doing kirtan, chanting, serving devotees. How do you maintain as a grahastha? How will you maintain your life? And Srivas Thakur had such faith. He said, he just clapped three times. And he said, Krishna will take care. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so pleased with the conviction that a grahastha had, in words of Krishna, that yoga kshemam vahamyaham. Mahaprabhu was very pleased. In fact, Mahaprabhu said that even if Lakshmi ji has to go out with a begging bowl, there is scarcity in the life of Lakshmi ji, still there will never be any scarcity in the house of Srivas Thakur. So This is a faith that a devotee has, that Krishna will always protect and Krishna will always provide when the right time comes. Just few chapters ahead in this Uddhav Gita, Lord Krishna mentions the qualities of Vaishnavas. Qualities of Vaishyas. And one of the qualities that Krishna mentions is a Vaishya has an increasing desire to earn money. But along with that, also Lord Krishna mentions that a Vaishya is equally charitable and he is very faithful and loyal to the Vedic principles and many such qualities. So, Hridayanand Maharaj, he writes in the purport that this quality of a Vaishya apparently appears that he is too greedy. But this quality of having a desire to increasingly earn money is not at all a materialistic greed, provided he practices the other qualities of being faithful and being charitable to Brahmanas and to other devotees. So, a devotee is hard working, but the whole purpose of working hard is to serve. Also, in the same chapter, Lord Krishna explains in detail about the qualities of Brahmanas. And within that, he mentions that Brahmanas have many qualities, but if Brahmana possesses this quality of being greedy, then all other qualities have no meaning. It is just like a white spot on the face, white spot of leprosy on the face, which may spoil the whole look of the face. So, there are many instances in scriptures, like Raghunath Das Goswami, he reduced his endeavor for his own personal maintenance slowly, gradually, where he immersed himself completely in the service of the Lord. And Prabhupada would often, many times we have heard this, Prabhupada giving class, Prabhupada would give example of thousands of elephants in the African jungles. How is it that they, although they need hundreds of tons of food every day, but how is it they are maintained? And Prabhupada said it is Krishna who is maintaining not a small ant, but also a big, huge elephant in the African jungle. So Prabhupada also had that faith that Krishna will provide for everyone's maintenance. Giriraj Maharaj, he shares this nice, wonderful pastime. When he joined Boston Temple, devotees faced a lot of financial crisis. And they used to have weekly programs, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and also a love feast program on Sunday, where they would invite a lot of guests and they would try to serve them in whatever the means and possibilities they had. And at one point of time, they started facing financial crunch. So then they wrote it to Prabhupada and Prabhupada said, if a need be, devotees should take up jobs. So there are many devotees, they all gathered together and one of the devotees called Patit Pavan Prabhu, he said that I used to work in a post office previously. So I can take a job in a post office as a peon. One devotee said that he can take a job in a grocery shop. One devotee, Giriraj Maharaj writes, he was very humble. His name was Nandakishore Prabhu. He suddenly raised his hand and he said, I have something to share. And this devotee, he took out a letter of Srila Prabhupada. And then in this letter, Prabhupada had mentioned, this letter read, that if all devotees go on Sankirtan, then all your problems will be solved, whether it's material or spiritual. So this devotee, he showed this letter to all the devotees and all devotees agreed that we should follow this instruction of Prabhupada and we should go all out for Sankirtan. And devotees, every day, they started going out for Sankirtan. Initially, they did not even have Back to Godhead magazine or some books to distribute. But they went out, did Sankirtan and got some donation. The first day when they returned back, they counted and they collected $7. And the next day when they went, they came back, they collected $12. And the third day when they came back, they found, oh, it's a wonderful prospect to go out every day. They collected $19. So their faith increased and they realized that whatever Prabhupada says, we should just follow. And they started going out every day for Harinam Sankirtan. Eventually, time came up that whatever little storefront they were staying in, they were staying in 95 Glen Villa Estate. They got a big property. They shifted from that small storefront to a bigger apartment in a 40 North Beacon Street. And Prabhupada was so happy. Prabhupada said, let the entire press from New York be shifted to Boston. And not only that, book distribution and book printing of Srila Prabhupada book began in Boston. And Giriraj Maharaj shared that Prabhupada came there and Prabhupada personally supervised the printing of this book, especially this book called Easy Journey to Other Planets. And Prabhupada personally gave the title, and Prabhupada wanted a specific picture on the cover page. One part of the cover page was a material universe, and the other part of the page, cover page, was a spiritual sky with Vaikuntha planets. And in between was a devotee in Shikha with a bead bag in hand, flying from the material sky to the spiritual sky. The cover page wanted to depict the theme that by practicing Bhakti Yoga, one can actually transcend from the material to the spiritual sky. And then when this book came out, Prabhupada was so pleased. Prabhupada looked at the cover page, looked at the devotee's picture who is flying. And Prabhupada said, yes, holy name of Lord Krishna has the potency. So Giriraj Maharaj is sharing his realization that Prabhupada had faith that if one actually takes shelter of the holy name, every problem will be solved. So, such instances we see, we get faith that yes, bhakti works. And if we just follow in the footsteps of our acharyas, even though we may not be at that level, but actually Krishna even provides to a neophyte and a beginner, and we get this conviction, yoga kshemam vahamyaham. After reading this verse may be misunderstood by many. It can be misunderstood in the way that there is actually no need to work, or it's all maya, or spiritual life is only for the failures, or for those who are lazy, good for nothing. Prabhupada said, yes, spiritual life is an escape. But it is not an escape from reality, but it's an escape to reality. Many times we go out preaching in colleges, and a lot of students who are just new to Krishna consciousness, they take spiritual life as an excuse to not study, to not do their duty, the main duty of studying properly. But Bhagavad Gita itself refutes this proposal, where in the 18th chapter, 18.8, Krishna says, what is renunciation in the mode of passion? Dukkham ityeva yat karma kaya klesha bhayat yajet sakritva rajasam tyaga naiva tyaga phalam labet. So work that is given up because it's going to give me a lot of dukkha and it's going to involve a lot of bodily discomfort. That's why I give it up. Because I don't like it, because it's
there's a lot of hassle, there is a lot of misery that's involved, that's why I give it up. Krishna says that will not lead to the fruit of Tyaga, because the fruit of Tyaga is ultimately bhakti. So what determines the mode is not just an action per se. What determines the mode is the intention with which the action is performed. Here the action is renunciation, but the intention is wrong. A person is performing action with the wrong intention. I was going to give it up. So Krishna is also not in favor of such type of renunciation. So we see in colleges a new bhakta or someone who has just started taking up Krishna consciousness may get into that mode. In fact, when Krishna says in the 9th chapter, Satatam Kirtayantomam Yatantascha Dradavrataha, my devotees, they are constantly endeavoring with determination. So when Krishna brings this word determination, when does this determination come into action? We have to apply determination when there is resistance, when there is opposition, when there is obstacle. So naturally Krishna is telling, Yatanta, my devotees are hard working. My devotees, they don't give up. They are in fact willing to take up challenge for the sake of my service. So devotees, they don't run away. They are not an escapist. So many a times, it may appear that a new, like this is what we have seen, a student wants to take a path of least resistance and finds studies to be quite troublesome, and many a time spirituality appears quite joyful and appears to be a path of least resistance. So a student may come up with an excuse or use bhakti or devotion as a garb or a reason to not do something which they don't like to do. So it is mentioned that, this is a beautiful article that was written by Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, where he mentions that bhakti seems like a path of least resistance. But the fact is, for a steady growth in bhakti requires hard work and commitment. And devotee that grows in spiritual lives are the ones who actually take up responsibilities. So we shouldn't have a fragmented vision of bhakti where we divorce our material life from bhakti. So responsibility doesn't simply mean that we are very good at our sadhana and swadhyaya, but we are equally good at the material end, where we are equally good at our jobs or our studies. Because if we won't take up, or if we try to escape from material life thinking to be a hardship, because it's a struggle, eventually we will run away from bhakti also. Because bhakti also needs that equal commitment. And bhakti also needs that hard work. So there has to be an ethos of hard work, commitment and sacrifice. Then we can actually balance both at the material and the spiritual end. In fact, a devotee considers his study or his job or his business also as a part of bhakti, because Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, Swakarmanatvam abhyarcham siddhim vindati manavah. One can worship me with the same work if he is not so advanced. So, so people say that spiritual life is meant for the failures or lazy, but it's not the fact. Devotees are more hardworking. In fact, in the verse, in the second canto, there's a beautiful verse that comes. Chirani kim patina santi dishanti bhiksham naivangripa parabhrita sarito pyashushyan riddha guha kim ajito vatino pasannan kasmat bhajanti kavayo dhanadur madandam. Shukdi Goswami is telling, that chirani kim patina santi, are there no torn clothes lying on the streets, or have the rivers stopped giving water to the thirsty, or have the fruits, have the trees stopped giving fruits, or have the caves stopped giving shelter? Above all, how is it that Supreme Lord will not give shelter to those who are surrendered? In that verse, Prabhupada gives a brilliant purport. And Prabhupada begins this purport by saying that renounced order of life or the devotees are never meant for begging or living at the cost of others. But they contribute maximum to the society. And Prabhupada gives the example of six Goswamis, especially Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, who contributed to society so much by literary work, by writing, living for all of us so many literatures. And Prabhupada said, devotees contribute more and substantial, not just for time being, but for generations to come, so that generation ahead can take advantage. And we see in the life of Srila Prabhupada also, Prabhupada himself showed to the world that how devotees are more hardworking than any other materialist. I was reading Srila Prabhupada Lilamrit, and this very nice instant that I came across, I just thought I'll just share here. A very nice pastime. Satsarup Das Goswami Maharaj puts it so perfectly. It was in the year 1974, November of 1974. Satsarup Das Goswami Maharaj writes, a sannyasi who would not stay for more than 2 or 3 days in a places like New York, such attractive places. A sannyasi who would not stay for more than 2 or 3 days, this same sannyasi, Srila Prabhupada, stayed for more than 2 months in Bombay. From November 1974 till January, mid of January 1975. The only reason being, Prabhupada was very much concerned about the NOC for Juhu temple construction. So, someone who would not stay for more than 2 or 3 days in one place, he's staying for 2 months, just so that once we get NOC for the temple construction, then the temple construction for Radha and Krishna can go full-fledged. And then, during that same time when Prabhupada was staying in Juhu, Prabhupada was also concerned about Krishna Balaram temple opening, which was to happen during Ram Navami, April of 1975. So Prabhupada is writing letters after letter to Surbhi Swami, saying that we have already extended the invitation to the governor of Uttar Pradesh, and he has very kindly agreed, Mr. Reddy has agreed to be there on the day of installation. So I want the installation to happen on the day of Ram Navami in the April of 1975. Parallelly, Prabhupada is receiving an invitation from Hridayanand Goswami from Mexico. Kindly please visit Mexico and Caracas. And Prabhupada is writing back that actually I am just waiting for the NOC for this Juhu land. And once we get the certificate, no objection certificate, then I will full-fledged travel. And the mid of January, devotees received this NOC certificate. And Prabhupada was so happy. Prabhupada immediately called out for a cornerstone laying ceremony. Already this ceremony was done when they got the land, Juhu land. But again, when this NOC certificate came, Prabhupada said, this is the beginning of building a temple for Radha and Krishna. So after performing this ceremony, cornerstone laying ceremony, Prabhupada said, now I will move out for preaching. And Satsarudas Maharaj writes, Prabhupada embarked on a preaching tour for 50 days. Prabhupada was 79 years old. This was January of 1975. Prabhupada was 79 years old. And this was his 8th world tour of the 10 years, that is, from 1965. Since 1965. And this tour would take him to 12 major cities in 50 days, where he would enter 7 major countries. And he would be traveling for more than 34,000 miles. Prabhupada's entire travel plan is mentioned. Prabhupada would take a flight from Bombay to Hong Kong, to Tokyo, to Hawaii. From Hawaii, he would go to Los Angeles. From Los Angeles, he would go to Mexico. From Mexico to Caracas. From Caracas to Miami. And from Miami, Prabhupada would go to Atlanta, Dallas, New York, London. From London, he would go to Tehran. And from Tehran, he would take a flight back to India, to Calcutta, where he would come back in March, and he would go to Mayapur for the international gathering, where more than 500 international American European devotees were to gather, just so that Prabhupada is coming. And then Prabhupada addresses them in the international gathering at Mayapur. Prabhupada is inspiring them. Prabhupada is telling that actually it is all of you who are sacrificing so much of your life. And all the devotees, they said that it's actually Prabhupada who is actually doing so much, traveling worldwide for all of us, just so that we stay enthused and inspired. And then Prabhupada, from there, from Mayapur, Prabhupada went to Vrindavan, straight to Vrindavan. It was April Ram Navami, and it was a big grand opening of the Krishna Balaram temple. And at that time, Satsarudas Goswami Maharaj writes that Prabhupada, at that point of time alone, was the ultimate judge of affairs for the entire ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada alone knew ISKCON's inner workings. He was the sole author and publishing director for BBT. Right from teaching the basic conducts to the highest philosophy. Right from attending morning program to setting the standards in the morning program or giving a talk. Satsarudas Maharaj writes that Prabhupada would be in the middle of very serious, urgent, important meeting. But Prabhupada never showed his laziness to come out of that meeting and give a talk and inspire his devotees. Now, it's very difficult when you are in the middle of a management. You are already under pressure to come out of that and give a talk where devotees are expecting so much. And Maharaj continues, whether it was attending press conferences or dealing with newcomer or a well-wisher or dealing with agnostics, Prabhupada was there right in front to deal with all this, although at that age. And whether Prabhupada was writing commentary to Srimad Bhagavatam, or in spite of his disruptive schedules, jet lags, or waiting at the immigration counters, custom delays, Prabhupada went all out to inspire all of his disciples. So Prabhupada proved, Maharaj writes, Prabhupada proved to the whole world that even though at that age, if he could do so much, he left no excuse for all of us. And then there's one nice purport in the third canto to this verse where Uddhava becomes old. But even when Uddhava got old, his devotional service to Lord Krishna did not become slackened. And in that purport, Prabhupada writes that there is no retirement for devotee. But in the service of the Lord, in the the service of the Lord, there is no retirement. In the world outside, people retire at a certain age. But in the service of the Lord, there is no retirement. But on the contrary, service increases more and more with the age that progresses. Uddhava became old, but that does not mean that his spirit became old. His service matured on the transcendental plane. So this is what we see from the life, from the purports, from the words that Prabhupada spoke, how spiritual life is not meant for. It's not an escape from the reality, but it's an escape to reality. Just to conclude, so it's practically impossible to practice Ajgar Vritti for many of us. But the principle that we can learn is we need to strike a balance in life. Whether we don't go to extremes. Extreme in the sense that we not endeavor too much or not endeavor at all. One extreme is endeavoring too much and one extreme is endeavoring, not endeavoring at all. So one has to strike a balance where one should not be striving for material improvement so much that one forgets one's spiritual improvement, and let the material opportunity not devour our time and energy so much, which is actually meant for the spiritual upliftment. Even the psychologists, they have come with these two terms in the field of psychology. No? These two terms are maximizer and optimizer. Now, optimizers, say for example, a maximizer has to buy a cell phone from the market. So this person will search for all the possible brands that are available in the market, will spend so much of his time, energy and thought process, you know, in buying just the one product, that he may miss out his time and energy for doing something productive. On the contrary, there are optimizers who are very quick in their decisions. They may buy a product, maybe at a higher cost, but they save so much of their time that they can do much more constructive work in something else. And in the course of doing that constructive work, they find great satisfaction. Now these maximizers, even though they have got a good product at a low cost, they are still unhappier than the optimizers. That's what the psychologists say. The optimizers have spent a bit more, but they are more satisfied than a person who has got a good deal at a lower cost. So there are three reasons why the maximizers are unhappier than the optimizers. The first reason being, the maximizers, because they have spent so much of their time, energy and thought process in buying one product, that product, if it doesn't give that much usability, then the expectation, the gap that's created between the expectation and the reality makes them dissatisfied. The second reason is because they are always in that anxiety that maybe because this product didn't turn out good, I could have spent more time in I could have searched a little more, then I would have then I would have got something better. And the third thing, they are always regretting, because all these equipments, gadgets, they all keep upgrading. When these gadgets get upgraded, so they are always regretting, maybe I could have got a better version of it. I got a lower version. So optimizers, they are quite quick in their decision and they intelligently use their time. They don't squander their time. So similarly, we can apply this principle of being an optimizer, where whatever time that we have, we make sure that we maximize our duties at the material front, and at the same time, we not at all compromise in getting what we need at the spiritual end. So maximizing at the material end means not trying to get everything best in our material life. But if we try getting everything best in the material life, it may so happen that we may end up compromising at the spiritual front. So in order to ensure the material and the spiritual growth parallelly, this principle can be applied in our life. I'll just end with this last pastime, because this verse speaks very much about sleep. Shayano nita nidrascha. Srila Prabhupada was in Gorakhpur, 1971. And Prabhupada was speaking from Ajamil pastime, glories of the holy name. And after the talk, during the talk, Prabhupada noticed a lot of devotees were sleeping. After the talk, Hamsadutta Swami came, approached Srila Prabhupada and told Prabhupada, "You gave a wonderful class." So Prabhupada immediately asked, "Do you think so? What do others devotees think?" So then Hamsadutta Swami said, "Actually, to be very honest, I'll tell you frankly that most of the devotees in the class were sleeping." So then Prabhupada said, "Yes, I also noticed that." And then Prabhupada said, "Actually, practically I am speaking to only few sincere disciples of mine who are eager to hear." And then Prabhupada noticed that whenever he would be giving Bhagavatam class, this problem persisted, where devotees, for some reason, they were sleeping in the class. One time, it so happened that practically everyone in the class lecture was sleeping. Prabhupada suddenly stopped in the middle of the class and Prabhupada said, "You all go and lie down." And then suddenly all the devotees, they woke up. And then Prabhupada said, Prabhupada for 45 minutes gave a talk on Nidra, on sleep. And then Prabhupada spoke so heavily. Prabhupada said, "What is the reason I want to know? Are you all not getting enough sleep? Is 6 hours sleep from 10 to 4 is not enough? Or are you all tired? Is there any other reason? Are you all overeating?" So then Yamuna Mataji, she suddenly spoke, "Swamiji, inattentiveness. That's the reason." Prabhupada said, "This is inattentiveness." Prabhupada is saying, unless you are tired or you have no proper sleep, you won't be inattentive. So then Gurudas Prabhu spoke, "Prabhupada, actually, we don't have enough sleep. We don't get enough sleep." So then Prabhupada said, "Do you require 24 hours sleep?" Prabhupada was very heavy. And then Prabhupada said, "You all sleep for 10 to 12 hours. Even Kumbhakarna sleep for 6 months in a year. If we are sleeping 12 hours in a day, that means we are sleeping 6 months in a year. That means we are no more than Kumbhakarna." So Giriraj Maharaji writes that he was so much taken aback that for that entire class and henceforward, he never slept in the class. And then after the class, he spoke to Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And so during that class, Prabhupada gave an example of Shad Goswami, Haridas Thakur, Raghunath Das Goswami. So the class was so heavy that Giriraj Maharaj, he spoke to Tamal Krishna Maharaj after the class. that Prabhupada spoke so forcefully that we were all forced to stay alert and pay attention. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he acknowledged this and he said, yes, it is only by the power of Srila Prabhupada that we can stay awake. And it is only by Srila Prabhupada's potency we can continue awake to our eternal relationship with Krishna. So this verse where it says that a transcendentalist should always be awakened to his eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I just thought that this pasam is very relevant, where we ourselves may not have that much capacity on our own to really stay awakened, but we need constant association and the mercy of devotees, where devotees will remind us that what's our true relationship with the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, it's very easy that we may again go back to sleep, again go back to our material conditioning. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki, Varantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Jai.